M. Night Shyamalan belongs to a school of filmmakers for whom the blockbuster was already an established idea. The Steven Spielberg summer hits like Jaws or Raiders of the Lost Ark
broke records in the...
It's been me this whole time. There's no Darren. It's only Mindy.
Wait, we already did this joke.
What?
On our 100th episode, it was the meta horror. Remember, we had me as a computer simulation that you were doing all this, writing my side of the dialogue.
Are you trying to tell me we're doing something that's already been done?
Yeah, I should have caught this when I was... Wait, what are you doing?
I'm just asking if we're in the middle of doing something that's already been done better.
I see what you're doing.
Shyamalan! I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rance Macabre, covering all things horror.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a little while. Sorry for the delay, but life got really, really busy.
Yes, working through grad school.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Yes.
It's
being
exhausting.
A student, using your brain is hard.
I am so out of practice of reading and writing. I mean, this show kept me in the, like, interested in research part of things.
Right.
But the amount of books I've had to read, like, it's as if I had to learn to read to attend grad school.
That's so sad.
but this will be a busy month, I suppose. We're going to try and get one in before Christmas as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be
Once the semester's over, I'm a happy little camper.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the last papers written for this semester.
Yeah.
And to say goodbye and maybe, like, read for fun. What a novel idea that would be.
Probably that won't happen. You're not going to read at all.
We'll see. Well, maybe for this show I'll find something fun to read. But this episode has been, like, on the to-do list on our original show ideas and sort of figuring out the approach and angle that was left to do. And so this episode we are bringing you the films of M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
We're going to be focusing specifically on those that he... had an influence, a strong influence from The Twilight Zone.
Like all
and
of them.
We're going to...
Is that all of them?
I do remember it was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was Murphy's idea. It was a Murphy meme about how M. Night Shyamalan is... Yeah, we get it, M. Night. We watch Twilight Zone too.
That was a Murphy idea.
Yeah. He's
Murphy's clever, that one. That
chime
dog.
Back in. It's been a while since Murphy had something to say.
I know.
Yeah. Maybe it's because we're recording later and he gets tired. Like, by the end of the shows we've been recording,
he's growing up.
Passes
he's
out.
Not, like, such a puppy where he's, like, in the business all the time.
Yeah. I figured it's just, like, it's late at night and he's, like us, he's trying to wind down.
No. The dog never winds down. But to be less of a puppy is, like, the best part of it.
All right. So most of this is from a Slate article, The Case Against M. Night Shyamalan.
Aww.
Although I promise this whole episode isn't just M. Night bashing.
Yeah, because that's just not nice.
No, nor
he's
is it
trying.
Accurate.
Like, he's doing the best he can do. You know?
How many directors get that pass? Like, he's trying really hard, you guys.
No, but let me tell you, when Shyamalan first hit the scene, before Shyamalan became like a verb where you're going to get Shyamalan, it was pretty cool stuff.
He had a pretty good streak, and I still remember fondly, you know, at least 40% of his films. I think that's accurate. 40%?
Unbreakable is good.
Unbreakable is good. I like 85% of Signs.
Me too.
The Sixth Sense is really solid.
Yes.
I enjoyed The Visit. I thought it was kind of hack, but overall I enjoyed it. And we're going to talk about it later here. Split. I enjoyed a lot of it.
I did not. Jackson did. My husband did.
Okay. So this article by Michael Ager for Slate.com goes a little bit like this. Manoj Neyiyatu M. Night Shyamalan was born in India. His parents were both doctors here in the States, but it was important for M. Night to be born there. Back in the States, he grew up in Penn Valley, Pennsylvania, an affluent suburb of Philadelphia. He was sent to Catholic school and attended the NYU film program, graduating early. At the age of 21, he was already writing, directing, and producing his first film, Praying with Anger. He played the lead, an Indian-American college student who discovers the spirituality of India. The movie had a very small release, but it did put him on the map. He next wrote and directed a movie called Wide Awake in 1998 for Miramax. It was a story of a sports-loving nun played by Rosie O'Donnell.
That just sounds so stupid.
Let me finish.
I'm sorry.
Who helps a boy find God after his grandfather dies.
Okay.
Don't you feel like an asshole?
I have never heard of that movie in my life.
No, I don't think it was widely released. The rough cut was too saccharine, and Harvey Weinstein, yes, the sexual predator Harvey Weinstein, unleashed a legendary speakerphone tirade that humiliated Shyamalan and made O'Donnell cry.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, now we know
that he's
Harvey Weinstein's
awful,
a huge douchebag. But yeah, ouch. Shyamalan now had two bombs to his name at the start of his career, but supported himself by screenwriting. There was, however, one chance to turn things around, a long shot. M. Night was in pursuit of the screenwriter's holy grail, the perfect script, one so redolent of profits, star-friendly roles, and greenlight power that the studio executive simply could not turn it down. Not only did Shyamalan write that script, The Sixth Sense, he also realized he had written that script. He flew to Los Angeles, rented a suite at the Four Seasons, and gave the final draft to his agents on Sunday, telling them to auction it off on Monday. Disney offered him $3 million. Those were the days
when
people
right?
were buying screenplays for millions of dollars. They promised him he could shoot the film even.
Dang.
On the Philadelphia set, Shyamalan somehow transformed himself into a disciplined director. He made the film very simply with long, soothing takes. He coaxed a good performance out of Bruce Willis by essentially requiring him not to act, while Haley Joel Osment turned in one of the greatest natural performances by any child actor.
Well, you know, The Sixth Sense for me was the first time I just allowed myself to be myself. You know, I did two little movies before then, and I was, you know, I had thought that the way to get into movies was through the kind of art world, through film festivals and stuff, because that's how everybody was getting, you know, known, you know, Soderbergh and all those guys. And so I tried that. I'm not good at that. And I'm bad at that, you know, and I just, you know, was failing. And I looked around my house and I said, you know, saw my movie posters that are up, and I saw Jaws and The Exorcist and, you know, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I said, you know, I should just make one of those. You know, I don't think people, you know, wait for permission to make one of those. Just go make one of those. So I sit down and I said, you know, I love ghosts. Let me just make a ghost story. So I started writing a ghost story. And so it was really kind of the freedom of realizing, you know, you love this kind of food. Why don't you, as a chef, make this kind of food? And I guess I was waiting for someone to give me permission. And I realized, you know, nobody gives you permission for that.
So it had been a while since I had seen The Sixth Sense,
right.
And I think it had been long enough that I hadn't watched it with that critical eye, kind of, oh, I should mention, I think because of the nature of M. Night Shyamalan's films, we will be talking full spoilers.
Yes, sorry, yes, that's fair. That's a fair thing to tell people.
Yeah, which I think for him kind of handicaps him, right?
Yes.
As far as like how
you
he's going to come
gonna
off here.
There's going to be a spoiler.
Right, and well, I think more than that, because his movies, at least in the first half of his career, relies so heavily on the twist.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of doing a disservice as far as, like, the impact of these films. But that said, like, listener, sorry, but if you haven't seen the movies, you should probably watch The Sixth Sense and Split, which we're
right.
talking about here first.
Shyamalan, do you remember, this is not nice, and so we'll get off on the not like crushing, because Sixth Sense was a really good movie, but do you remember I think you were with me in the movie theater, and I don't know what we were watching, and the preview for Devil came on.
You've mentioned this before.
Were
yes.
you not in the movie with me?
No.
What the fuck was I watching? Maybe Paranormal Activity or something. I just remember, you know, it looked so exciting, the preview for Devil. Everyone was like, oh my gosh, this is great. And everyone's into it. And then it said from the maker of The Sixth Sense or whatever. And everyone collectively groaned. And then everyone collectively laughed at everyone groaning. And it was a really, like, uncomfortable laughing situation.
See, those are the moments you're missing by not going to the theater more often.
I guess. I'm not just missing the drunk person talking loudly.
So, like Hitchcock, M. Night Shyamalan does like to give himself cameos in the movie.
Yes,
in The Sixth Sense, he's one of the doctors. In Unbreakable, he's the guy stashing drugs in the bathroom. In Signs, he's the guy sitting in the truck that he's trapped an alien in his pantry. That's right. One of my favorites. In The Village, I think he plays a park ranger. In Lady in the Water, he gives himself a more filled-out character. Okay, jump to Split, where he's a psychologist computer guy. But he his ego kind of leads the way into his
yes.
films.
It's not like Hitchcock, because Hitchcock was always kind of like in there.
He's
maybe it was
a dog.
Funny.
Like
or
he's
it was,
in and out
yeah,
of the frame.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it wasn't about him.
I don't know that Hitchcock ever gave himself a speaking role where Emily and I
It just
absolutely.
Wasn't about him. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. If it's an M. Night joint, you can expect to see him. Although, I don't remember seeing him in The Visit. But that
I
could just be my
faulty memory.
Well,
there's not that
memory.
Many people in The Visit, so maybe
right.
that's why.
What is it?
Why did you leave me?
I didn't leave you.
Okay, so let's start with The Sixth Sense from 1999, written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, starring, of course, New Jersey's own Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment, who I had
only
seen...
I did not know Bruce Willis was from New Jersey.
I think I've even mentioned it on the show before. Anytime someone's from New Jersey,
I apparently don't listen.
Haley Joel Osment, who I think before this he had done some TV, and he was little Forrest Gump. He was like Forrest Gump
really?
Jr., Yeah, you don't
no,
remember that?
No, I don't
He's
remember
adorable.
That.
As cute as he is in this. Oh, my goodness. He's like a little bug. He's so adorable.
He's
in Forrest Gump.
Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah. He's like a grown-up bearded hipster
yeah,
guy.
Yeah,
He's having a fun resurgence. Like, every role he's taken, like, I like that he's got a sense of humor about himself. He wasn't one of these child stars who, like, cratered out.
No. He was also in Secondhand Lions, which is so good.
Is it actually?
No, it's really, really good.
Robert Duvall, who's the other old guy in it?
Michael Caine.
Oh, really?
It's
okay.
Really, well. Really good. I don't know why you're laughing.
Well, because who talks about Secondhand Lions?
Haley Joel Osment was the little kid.
And the ever brilliant Toni Collette plays Cole's mom, Lynn Sear. She is really good with accents.
Yes.
In sort of talking about the place in M. Night. Really tries to focus all of his stories in Pennsylvania, if not the Philadelphia area specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted like a Philly girl. He wanted like a local who grew up in that house. And Toni Collette is Australian, I believe.
Yes, she
I mean,
is.
She's also a singer in a rock band. So like she's got range, like vocal range. And she is really natural in
she's
this.
She's a really good actor.
I love this. And she's later in United States of Terror, which mm-hmm. kind of associates with Split just in terms of the subject matter. But also filling out the cast is Donnie Wahlberg.
Yes. We hadn't seen at this point in time, we hadn't seen Donnie Wahlberg in years and years, I think. And then he just shows up looking terrible in this.
Okay, so I have mixed feelings because I feel like he's the like sort of shameful Wahlberg brother as far as like not really getting his due, overshadowed
now
by Mark Wahlberg.
Now he's not shameful. Like,
no?
Now he, because he has some TV show, and now Donnie Wahlberg is, like, the thing.
And New Kids. I always forget New Kids.
Yeah.
That's quite
he
a bit of cachet.
Bad boy.
Like, he has fans. Like, Donnie Wahlberg has fans. That's weird to think.
Lots of fans.
But
I saw New Kids on the Block a few years ago.
And he was there?
Yes, of course he was. What do you mean? New
what,
Kids on
like,
the Block.
He's got something better to do. No, he's
on,
like, on Blue
TV
Bloods
show.
Or something. Yeah, yeah. But, so, the big deal for this is that when he met M. Night for the casting, like all he had really been known for was New Kids on the Block, and
yeah.
he's kind of, I don't know, he's probably feeling some peer pressure from his brother, and so like he was in shape, and he let M. Night know, I'm gonna lose some weight for this, and M. Night's like, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
And then he lost 43 pounds.
Yes,
for
he
the
looked
role.
Crazy. It was good, actually.
If there's a reason he's unrecognizable, like he looks like Christian Bale in The Machinist.
And he's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, he was terrific. You know what? I feel bad that, like, I don't know that he's ever been that good again.
He's in Saw, right? He's actually pretty good in Saw.
Oh, he's in Saw 2.
Yeah,
and
then when
3,
they, like, find him
and
later.
Yeah. But,
I kind of like that story.
Not, I can't watch him. I can't take him seriously. In this, I love his brief moment because, like, he hits a depth of, like, sadness and despair mm-hmm. that isn't easy to get to, and it's pretty fucked
it's
up.
Very good.
Do you know why you're afraid when you're alone? I do.
What do you want?
What he promised me! I want what he promised.
Oh, my God.
Do I know you? Don't you know me, hero? Don't you even remember your own patience? Downtown clinic. Single-parent family. Possible mood disorder. I was afraid. You told me I was having trouble coping with my parents' divorce. You were wrong. Now look at me! I don't want to be afraid no more.
Just give me a minute to think.
I waited 10 years for you! I'm not giving you
so
nothing!
So thinking about this episode and doing the research, I did come across at least two different Twilight Zone episodes that share content and premise with the movie. One of them is an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge from 1962. I think it was in the last season of the Twilight Zone. And just in my viewing around, there's an episode called The Hunt that also plays with the idea. But the one that really jumps out is an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, because it was a short story before it was adapted by the French director Robert Enrico. In 1962, it was a 25-minute short film and was even submitted and won an Oscar. The original short story was published by Ambrose Bierce in 1890, and it's just the way things sort of go, going down the rabbit hole, that this was a favorite story by Kurt Vonnegut, and he name-checked it specifically, writing, "I consider anybody a twerp who hasn't read the greatest American short story, which is An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge by Ambrose Bierce."
That's a very Kurt Vonnegut thing to say.
Mm-hmm. He said, "It isn't remotely political. It is a flawless example of American genius, like Sophisticated Lady by Duke Ellington or The Franklin Stove." And, like, I'm a really big Vonnegut fan. And so I read that and I was like, God damn it. Now I got to find a short story. And thankfully, it's easy to find, and it is only about 6 pages. So I would recommend someone read it and sort of first and foremost consider it was written, you know, in 1890. But director Robert Enrico adapting it, like, it's incredibly well done. And as far as Twilight Zone episodes, it's kind of fun that, like, it's filmic. It's beautiful. It has production value that the Twilight Zone doesn't always arrive at.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great short story. It plays with editing really well. And so in 1962, it won the first prize for best short subject at the 1962 Cannes Film Festival. It would go on to win the Oscar in 1964 for best short subject. And then when it was later shown on television as part of the final season of the Twilight Zone, it also won an Emmy. Making
it's like winning everything. It's like cheating.
It's like what's the term for when someone wins a Tony, an Oscar, and a Emmy? EGOT. Yeah,
I could not put those.
Tracy Morgan talks about it in 30 Rock. But yeah, it's like the filmic version of an EGOT. So for that, we'll be talking more in depth about an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge on our Patreon episode. That'll sort of pair with this as an accompanying episode, as well as more Twilight Zone centered stuff. But I would recommend it. It is on Netflix. It's on the fifth and last season of the Twilight Zone. Yeah, it's beautiful and jarring. And yeah, I don't know. I might be giving it too much credit just in sort of being really original for 1962.
Fine. Whatever. You're entitled to it.
Okay, back to The Sixth Sense.
Stop it.
I don't know how else to look.
You're a stuttering Stanley.
Excuse me?
You talked funny when you went to school here. You talked funny all the way to high school.
What?
You shouldn't look at people. It makes them feel bad.
How did you...
Stop looking at me!
Who have you
Ben speaking.
Stuttering Stanley! Stuttering Stanley! Stuttering Stanley!
So this was one of those movies in 1999 when it came out. There was so much buzz around it.
This
right?
was like the Blair Witch as far as the word of mouth spread.
Yes, but then you knew that, like, I didn't even know that there was a twist, I feel, but you knew no one wanted to talk about it. Like, you weren't supposed to talk about it, then you go see the movie.
Wow, remember those days?
It's crazy, right? And because could you, like, imagine now on Twitter and stuff, everyone would be like, bah. And I remember seeing this one in the theater because I couldn't wait, and everyone was talking about it. And a lot of times I can figure out a movie pretty quickly. This was one that I literally didn't figure it out until the ring drops.
The plot.
I didn't know.
Yeah. The plotting of this is incredibly well done. He's sneaky. He's really effective
at
telling this particular story. He talks about it sort of coming to him as one singular idea. And so, yeah, I guess if it's cohesive, it's for that reason that this wasn't like, you know, a 5-year plan. We kind of talk about it. We talked about his renting a room at the Four Seasons to finish the script and in that period of time, and like turning it around. Like, that's pretty ballsy to turn around from that weekend finishing writing it and going like, this first draft is ready to go.
Yeah, like this, it's ready. It's good. It's never going to be better.
Yeah, but they bought it. It's such a solid build up. Bruce Willis. In particular, I don't know that he challenges himself anymore as an actor. He's kind of going through the motions these days. But here, like, he has this sort of like melancholy quiet to him.
Yeah.
I really like it. Like, he doesn't lose his sense of humor, and he is like this compassionate child therapist. The movie opens up with him receiving an award for his service to children, and we kind of, it's a good shorthand. Someone getting an award for something.
He really isn't one of those actors that stretches themselves, right? And I mean, the more I think about it, I don't really think of him ever like really moving me, except for in this.
I don't think he's ever done an accent.
Well, it doesn't mean that you have to do an accent.
No, of course not, because he's from New Jersey, and what? Why
but
would you want to improve upon that?
But has he ever been in a movie where he kind of like moves you besides Sixth Sense?
Unbreakable. He's sort of
he's good.
Covers similar territory, just
that's
as far
just,
as this like
yeah
sadness. Well, no, he often sort of rests on his charm and sort of looks at looks to other characters and that kind of stuff.
He is very charming.
Yeah, but I think in the same way that like Schwarzenegger doesn't stretch. Stallone doesn't stretch. Jean-Claude Van Damme is actually in the movie named after him. It's actually pretty good. But no, Bruce Willis, like I said, I can't remember him ever doing an accent or a character that wasn't decidedly American.
Right.
I mean, even when he plays a baby, he's still doing his own voice and look who's talking. But here we get the slow burn with Cole being like really careful with the secret. And like Haley Joel Osment is so good at like 9 years old or whatever in this that he elevates the other actors around him for a character, for a child actor to do that. Like, I can't think of another kid who's been this good this young.
You take every single piece individually, and Shyamalan could get credit for that. I mean, he did a great job directing these people.
Yeah, yeah. And this contrasted with, say, The Happening, which is funny to think that, like, that's the crappy Wahlberg M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, it's so bad. Saw that one in the theater.
But that's a movie that, like, you feel like M. Night was watching it happen in front of him with one eye closed. Like, he lost depth perception in terms of his characters.
Oh, no.
Oh, I don't know.
The toxin? The toxin is affecting them?
Are those people killing themselves?
You were with a private. What do we do?
We need to do something.
Hey, just let me think.
They're dying!
I need a second. They released it? We're not near the road.
We can't just stand here as uninformed observers.
I need a second, okay? Just give me a second.
We're not gonna be one of those assholes on the news who watches a crime happen and not do something. We're not assholes.
Just a second.
There were children in that room. Elliot, please tell us what to do.
I need a second, okay? Why can't anybody give me a goddamn second?
This is a weird poll, but Gina Gershon, that's her name, right?
Mm-hmm. From Showgirls?
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, in Showgirls, she talked about that experience as, like, she thought it was a comedy. Like, she thought it was this ridiculous, over-the-top thing that the filmmakers were recognizing the silliness in and sort of behaved accordingly. And her character is huge and a cokehead and whatnot. You'd never get that with Wahlberg's performance in The Happening. It's baffling is what it is.
It's really, really crazy.
It feels like they filmed the blocking of scenes. Like, when they're just sort of going over rough lines. Like, okay, I'm going to walk over to that tree, and I'm going to accuse it of being one of these killers, and I'm going to tell it I'm not a threat. And then, okay, and then I'll walk over here and do that other thing. And they're like, it's done. And he's like, you didn't yell action. It's okay. It's all, we got it. It's,
right. Or it's like, we're going to have her walk past the window. Then you're going to notice her. Then you're going to put a reaction on your face. In that order, no faster.
But okay, back to
Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense.
With some great acting.
What he did great, yeah. So when Haley Joel Osment finally does give the line that's now become iconic.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
In your dreams? While you're awake? Dead people, like, in graves and coffins?
Walking around like regular people. We don't see each other. They only see what they want to see. They don't know they're dead.
How often do you see them?
All the time.
At that moment, it kind of sent chills up your back. Like, it's fun because up to this point, like, you just think he's a maladjusted kid. Like, he's isolated. The other kids think he's a weirdo, and he's not relating to his mother, and they're not getting along especially well. And then it turns out that, like, none of this is him being, like, a fucked up kid. He's got the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Right.
Being terrorized on a nightly basis.
Which would be kind of cool and then not cool at the same time.
All right. Well, let me know. What's the cool part of what he's...
You could know all sorts of secrets.
That he... Oh, yeah, there's the great scene with
Because you could
the
have
teacher.
Them listening. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a lot you could do if you had ghosts on your side. My fear would be the annoying ghost. The ghost who wants to sing all the fucking time or something.
Or later, Bruce Willis sort of discovers on tape his own EVP recording he didn't even realize he was doing. But he listens back to his old sessions, and there's a Spanish language ghost like terrifying this little kid. If you didn't speak Spanish, you were haunted by a Spanish-speaking ghost.
Like,
that would be exhausting.
Yes, it would be.
You spend your day on Google Translate trying to, like, Scooby-Doo the solution to this problem.
Like, I can't help you. And then the ghost would just talk louder in Spanish.
Sean! So recently, I wanted to retweet this, and I probably get around to that, but there was an episode of the podcast Criminal that talked about the spirituality trend, but specifically in England. And there's a famous case of a young girl who claimed that she was being communicated with. And she seemingly did have this ability to go into tests completely unprepared and pull answers from the ether.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, it was a great episode. It's a really cool story. I kind of wish I had known about that one before we did our two-parter on spirituality, because her story is, like, it's convincing. Before they move into, like, debunking mode, it's really cool. It's really convincing. Yeah, so that idea of someone having spirits kind of swirling around at all times, kind of like the movie Ghost, but Whoopi Goldberg, like, he becomes this antenna where they eventually start...
Like, so you're a bunch of ghosts, and you see, like, one person can communicate with somebody. You're going to go follow that other somebody.
That sounds exhausting. It does.
I think you would want to, maybe. I don't know. If I was a ghost, I would just walk around.
I watch a lot of movies. I think I'd probably enjoy that part.
You can't change the channel?
Oh, I meant, like, go to the theater.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, what if you live in someone's house that watches shitty things? Like, what if you lived in my house?
That's like, you're watching The Wire again?
Yes, ghost. Get over it.
Shyamalan. One of the things I do like M. Night Shyamalan 4 is his cinematography. It's a total throwback to Hitchcock. It's a total throwback to moving the camera and sort of before you know it, like you have three different framings of characters and you've never cut.
Right. It's all very broad, very sweeping.
Yeah, yeah. It's he likes to start from a wide and move in. And yeah.
Sometimes to me it strikes me as like old-fashioned a little bit.
I like that part of it.
Like in The Visit, there was a lot of long sweeping things, and I was like, that's enough.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually he does call attention to it. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the line you got to draw, that like if it's not a POV shot, it doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense to...
Right.
Yeah,
not that I want you to cut between characters to show me everyone's face as they're talking. Like, I get that, too.
That's all the happening needed. More, longer shots, longer takes.
Staring at some trees and some wind. Sean.
Olivia Williams plays Bruce Willis's wife. She's a Brit who, I don't know, I thought she was everybody's favorite character in Rushmore, but that might have just been teenage me speaking.
You can think whatever you want.
But yeah, no, so she, considering how little dialogue she has throughout the piece, for her, like her role is almost this like tone poem of, mm-hmm. of tragedy. I mean, we sort of absorb more of that down the line. But, yeah, I don't know. I really liked her. I think even the guy she's working with is a familiar face now. You know what? I think that guy comes back in Split. I think he plays the father in the flashbacks when she's a little girl. I think that's the same actor.
Huh.
Maybe he's a Philly local. I don't know how he winds up more times in M. Night films, but in any case.
M. Night likes him. Did we call him M. Night? Is that what people call him?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And I am very proud that for this episode, I learned how to spell his last name.
Like, I did not.
I don't need spell check anymore.
Really? Good for you. Yeah. I just make it up every time. I put that Y wherever the shit I feel like it. I know it's there, but like I don't know where it comes.
Because a lot has been said about this movie that came out in 1999, we'll kind of leave this one shorter and sort of stand by. I think it's on Netflix now.
I think any horror fan has seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
I feel that way. I feel like everybody I've spoken to about this is definitely.
I've never
seen it.
Met a person who hasn't seen it.
Yeah, and when people, it's funny to watch people's reaction when that does come up in a public conversation. Everybody kind of has that moment that like, how do I not spoil the end and
it's
still
the point
tell
of
them
the movie.
It's good? Yeah, yeah. I guess it is the point of the movie, and it is sort of threaded so well that more than a twist, like this movie takes on a different experience the second time you watch it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Fight Club in that way, that a second viewing, you are studying any
You're
number
looking for
of
everything.
Things.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I love that. And then it also, you know, I love when he sort of goes into, like, proactive mode. He sort of, you know, he becomes the Scooby Gang and sort mm-hmm. of figuring out the, Misha
Barton.
Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so young Misha Barton and her being one of the ghost to sort of satellite in to find him and sort of get some justice like that. Once they move into that mode, I really liked
yeah.
the relationship between Cole and
I think a lot of Shyamalan therapist. Stuff kind of it does that. It starts with really nice setting of the scene, setting of your characters, and then it hits a point where it's just like balls to the wall. It goes
that's
from
where
there.
The gamble comes
to
into play.
Then you get Shyamalan, and that's the twist, and then that's it. But that's it. It kind of runs like balls to the wall until you get Shyamalan, and then you're like mad. So, I mean, later movies, you get mad. In the early ones, you're like, yeah, it's great, Shyamalan.
What I am about to tell you is highly classified. 2 days ago, Muslim terrorists hijacked our imagination. Frankly, we don't know what their next move is or how to stop them.
In times like these, the government often turns to Hollywood for help. You creative filmmakers can think of ideas we just can't.
That's why we've asked you here, M. Night Shyamalan. The Sixth Sense, Signs, The Village, all very clever films. But can you use your amazing idea brain now to help us stop the terrorists?
What if it turns out they aren't terrorists, but they're actually werewolves from the future?
No, they're terrorists. They've been linked to Al-Qaeda.
But what if Al-Qaeda, it turns out, is the group being terrorized? By aliens?
No, that's not an idea. That's a twist. We need ideas.
How about we make everyone think that terrorists attacked us? But really, we were all already dead.
Get him out of here.
The Sixth Sense, I think, is the closest he's ever gotten to a perfect movie. And for his career, that's got to be a little frustrating.
I think Unbreakable is actually really, really good.
I'm surprised you like it as much as you. I adore it. Like,
you know what?
I see myself in
a
little kid.
Until I took a comic book class one time in college, in my undergrad. And we Unbreakable was one of
class.
Yeah, comic book class. Comic books are very important.
You don't have to tell me.
Yeah. Anyway, so I took a comic books class because that's what liberal arts people do. And we watched Unbreakable was one of those things. And okay. So it was really cool, you know, to yeah. really like dissect it like that. I took a films class too. I took all sorts of shit.
So Unbreakable ties in to Split. We'll get into that more in depth. But as far as Shyamalan's career, like, I don't know. I don't begrudge him the hard movies. I think because he's sort of shown, you know, these sort of glimmers of brilliance, I'm always rooting for him. I mm-hmm. kind of – I don't know that I'm committed or even all that interested for the next movie, Glass, where he's sort of – he's making his own Marvel Cinematic Universe with his villains. But But as far as like hitting all the beats with The Sixth Sense, like it's kind of perfect in terms of like its wide success. Like yeah. everybody loves to see a cute little kid, and in this place, like he's, you know, it's a little bit scary. There are moments in this that like will make your hair stand.
Oh
on
yeah,
end.
There's scary parts.
Yeah, and yeah, Bruce Willis like
good
still
acting
in
all
his
around.
Charming days. Yeah. So yeah, the Sixth Sense. But moving
I would say rewatch it. If you haven't watched it in a couple years.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's on Netflix for now. Yeah, check it out. And I think, let's see, as far as his catalog on HBO Go, they're Split, and I think The Visit is still up there.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend The Visit, at least.
I would recommend The Visit.
But okay, so from 2016, Split.
Pardon me, sir. I think you have the wrong car.
You've emailed for an appointment 2 days in a row. I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen?
There's a flower on the pillows, a flower in the bathroom, like we're important.
Who is that? Maybe she can help us.
We're here! We're in here!
Don't worry. He knows what you're here for.
An individual with multiple personalities can change their body chemistry with their thoughts.
Someone's coming for you.
So 2016 Split, starring James McAvoy.
Yeah.
Who's, playing you know, all the
reason
people.
This is decent. Playing all the people.
All the people. Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, from The Witch.
We know from The Witch.
Yeah.
She looks great with brown hair. Like, at first I was like, who are you? Because she has blonde
oh,
hair
really?
And The
you
Witch. Didn't... And then okay. I'm like, she looks so familiar. And then
the,
I had to look into it.
The eyes are, yeah, they're like, you know, an ounce too far apart. And they give her a kind of like Uma Thurman sort
yeah.
of appeal.
Yeah, it's so, like, it's so striking. She's so yeah. striking. She's in it. And then, yeah, Betty Buckley is in it. What? Get out of here. Sing some Cats. No problem.
Oh, I don't know her from Cats. Okay.
Yeah. And then did you... I don't know if you ever saw the movie, but one of the other girls, because there's a kidnapping that takes place, named Haley Lou Richardson, she actually was in this really adorable movie called The Edge of 17, and I think everyone should watch it. It's really good.
The Edge of 17.
Yeah.
I'll put that on my to-do list.
It's really cute.
Make sure no one else is around.
No, it's really cute. Woody Harrelson is in it.
Okay. Okay, so it's
and
not like
And that Haley
a
Steinfeld or whatever her name is.
Okay.
She's in it, too. Oh, and then another girl who got kidnapped. Sorry, I forgot. There's a lot of people
yeah.
in this movie that I know. She was from Skins.
Okay. The American Skins or the English Skins?
English Skins. She was in the third group of kids.
Okay. She must have been pretty young.
Everyone in Skins is, like, young when they're in it.
Okay.
It's not, like, older people playing young people. We only do that mostly here in the States.
Okay, so this movie, okay.
Okay.
I've got mixed feelings. in just about every fucking scene in this movie as far as like what I'm enjoying and what is really offensively stupid.
Yes. So I also felt a little torn by enjoying myself just for enjoying a movie and enjoying like watching shit go on, and it's silly. It's like a romp, but yeah, there were certain things that were just
psychological
terrible.
Romp.
That should be on the poster. A psychological romp.
The Rance
romp.
Macabre says, a psychological romp. Okay, so as far as the casting, on the trivia page for Split, it does present that Joaquin Phoenix was originally cast in McAvoy's role. And that sounds even more fucking bonkers.
That would be so obnoxious. Can you imagine how obnoxious that would have been?
I'm not sure if that would have been the worst thing I've ever seen in the world, or if I would have spent all my student loan money just watching that film in the theaters on repeat because it was a spectacle to behold. Like,
it would have been terrible.
You know what? I've got like a viscerally bad reaction to Joaquin Phoenix, so it would have been really difficult.
I like him in the Johnny Cash movie, but...
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. The script for that was terrible, but he was very good.
Yeah.
And Reese Witherspoon, particularly. Yeah. We're talking about a lot of other non-horror movies
in
this
episode.
I know.
It's like, what have you guys been doing when you're not watching horror now lately? Really? We've been watching shit.
Watching The Edge of 17? Is that what
Listen,
that
was? Listen, it was adorable. It's really cute.
Okay, so we all kind of grew up with a very, like, mainstream... generic sort of pop culture version of split personality disorder. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of became a staple, certainly after Fight Club. They even joke about it in adaptation, how it's just it very quickly becomes cliche. It's doing a disservice to the people who actually do suffer from DID.
When I was little, my dad used to call me Sybil if I would be crazy, because as a little kid I would apparently be insane
and
sometimes.
You're like, I'm four, I don't get that reference.
Exactly. I never got it until I was older. I was like, Sybil, But I was also the little kid who was like digging through the DSM-4 to be like, maybe me.
No shit. That's terrifying. Before there was WebMD, you had to figure out other ways to like give yourself paranoia. But so, yeah, so more aptly titled dissociative identity disorder, or DID. These days, it's the more accurate, and I don't know that it's been accurately portrayed, perhaps in the United States of Tara with Toni Collette, the aforementioned Toni Collette. And that's a... TV show that actually has advisors and actually pays some attention to the social dynamics of what it means to have identity disorders. Here we're playing fast and loose. I feel like
fast and loose.
Every account of a spectacular alternate personality that's ever been written down makes it into this film.
Yes,
like it struggles so badly to legitimize itself that it starts to really bother me, because I think differently than like sci-fi films that play fast and loose with the laws of physics and science, when there are people who actually suffer from these conditions and their negative portrayal affects the culture, like you gotta feel bad. Like, that's not right.
He also takes a tiny grain of truth and then like really goes to town on it.
Which one in particular?
So let's talk about the idea of DID, right? It does occur from usually some sort of attachment trauma, all right? That's where it kind of starts, and then later manifests itself from there, let's say. So they give James McAvoy this like bad mom kind of thing.
Who's also suffering from her own mental illness.
Exactly.
Presumably
Fine.
OCD.
Good, Shyamalan. That's great. But then it's like he has this idea then about, oh, well, and then here comes the main point of the movie, whatever. These people can change their physiological.
Yeah.
That's not exactly true, but it's based in a tiny baby bit of truth. So it's based in this woman who was in Germany who had four different personalities, and including the host, not including the host. So I guess there's five of them. She was in an accident as a child. It caused her to be blind. And so they could tell by brain activity that she was not seeing. It was factual, not firing on the screen. Great. She develops these other personalities. Two of them can see.
Okay.
Two of them absolutely can see, and they can look at the brain scan and see that they actually are seeing. And they're varying levels of seeing. One of them is fully sighted. One of them is able to have depth perception. And they can see it by which parts of the brain are functioning, whether or not you're seeing. And when she's the host or any of these other personalities that don't have sight, it's completely shut off.
Wow, that's got to stink for those other personalities. Yeah, that, like, right? I'm in here too. Give me access.
And that's actually freaking amazing.
It's pretty, I mean, it's unique for a reason because it's kind of unheard of. That said, like, hysterical blindness is a thing that's tracked. I think it's far more common than DID, but there is like a psychosomatic effect that your brain might shut off your eyes. It is strange to think that, like, in the dissociative process that arrives from trauma, where your brain is doing its best to, like, protect your overall well-being and sort of trying to guard your psyche, for it to sort of decide that, like, let's just turn off the lights. Like, that's, I don't know. The mind is fascinating.
It's fascinating.
And like, my sort of very armchair quarterback fascination with psychology, I don't know. It's also frustrating. Some of the accounts in the story, I mean, it's only a description that the psychologist gives, but the dog that responds differently to different personalities in a person, that, like, if you've been around pets, they're empathetic and they will respond to your behavior and your personality.
Right.
They're dogs that can smell cancer. Like, they're intuitive. They've got heightened senses. That's not proof of, like, a person's physicality changing dramatically.
She was probably the most annoying part, Betty Buckley.
Now it's her. It's her decisions. It's not M. Night Shyamalan anymore.
Knight gave me two books, suggested two books to read, which I did. And then a friend of mine suggested another book. But I worked, I've been in analysis forever. And so I have the equivalent of a master's degree in psychology from my own analysis. But I also worked specifically with a brilliant psychologist in New York who had worked with DID patients. I met with her in a series of sessions with a script. And then she also made herself available on the phone each night before I would shoot a scene. We'd go over my notes that we had discussed, the moment-to-moment experience. And I was concerned about maintaining a professional decorum with the intensity of passionate concern she had for James's character, Kevin, and all his myriad of personalities. And I especially loved the scene where he's playing, the character Dennis, but he's pretending to be Barry. And we have a couple of scenes like that where I'm trying to get him to reveal himself as Dennis, who I've never met. And Dennis is a bit of a hard ass. So I love those scenes very much, that the intensity of the experience working with such a great actor like James McAvoy and my favorite director, Mr.
This is your second time working together, correct?
Yes.
Second time? Uh-huh. You had a great part in The Happening.
Right.
So as far as portrayals and psychological trends, I'm kind of glad that the quote, unlocked potential of the brain is an idea that we're getting less and less of, because movies like Luc Besson's Lucy or Limitless, or if you remember the John Travolta movie Phenomenon.
I do remember that movie.
Aliens give him special powers where he gets to use all his brain.
Aww.
I'm glad that stuff is going away, because that is like the worst end of the spectrum as far as accuracy goes. Mm-hmm. But here we're presented with Kevin Wendell Crum, who is James McAvoy's character. He's the host, right? He's the guy whose driver's license gets to get carried around.
That would be the host, the main guy whose body it is. And then everyone else is an alter.
An alter. I like that. As far as, like, when they're talking about everybody sort of sitting, waiting their turn for the light. I kind of like those descriptions as far as, like, filling out this mental space. And I thought it didn't need to go to 23 personalities. I feel like that's kind of, it's just exaggeration for effect. And so when those 23 are worried about the 24th, it's like, were they concerned as it ramped up to 20? Were there always 24?
So the guy who McAvoy's character is based on is this guy named Billy Milligan. And it's an interesting case, very interesting guy. He had a biography written about him by Daniel Keyes, who did Flowers for Algernon.
Oh.
So kind of interesting idea. This guy was the first guy to be acquitted of a major crime for multiple personality, which is what they called it in the 70s.
Right, right.
This happened in his crimes, well, happened for a long time leading up to this. And what really got him in trouble was the rape of three girls.
Yikes.
At Ohio State campus. He calls his personalities the undesirables, which is some of the language that's being used in Split, right? For long the horde.
Long before Trump supporters.
Exactly. His are undesirables.
Those deplorables. That's
and some of them are really interesting because you have, just like in Split, a prim and proper Englishman.
Oh.
This one's name is Arthur. You have someone who is the manipulator, which in most DID cases, you have a juvenile and someone who's the prosecutor of things. So you have one guy who's a manipulator. He had a con artist within him. This one was my favorite, a guy who was a Yugoslavian communist.
Okay. This guy was in college when he...
No, he was just a man.
No?
He raped college girls.
Okay, but he was older.
Yeah. So he had this Yugoslavian communist, and that guy liked to rob people because...
As they did.
Like Robin Hood.
No, that's silly.
Like Robin Hood is what it was.
Okay. To give to the other rob from the other personalities.
Yeah. No.
No.
Like
no.
Rob banks and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he robbed things.
Oh,
he literally stole things.
Okay.
But only the Yugoslavians stole things.
All right. I guess he's a useful guy to have around.
The rapist, that personality that was there, was a 19-year-old lesbian who craved affection. And she committed the rapes. And here's where I don't know. Like, I kind of want to call
bullshit.
I call bullshit on this. I call bullshit on this guy. Bullshit artist.
Okay. But it sounds like a psychologist presented this to the court. Did wait?
Yes, but
did
it
you
was
say
in,
he got off because of this?
And he spent time in state-run mental facilities.
Wow! And it sounds like most treatment for DID is therapy. Like there isn't really a chemical that helps split personalities.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, but think about the state-run hospitals that were existing in the late 70s, early 80s. There's no help being given.
No.
And then he was released, and then he died of like old age.
I mean, the condition is extraordinarily rare, and it's actually come up on the show before in the context of how this materializes in American culture versus other cultures. And I think America's, because it's been portrayed as badly as it has, like we kind of assume that these other personalities are malevolent in some way.
Right.
But it's so – as rare as the condition is, it's even more rare that these people are violent. I mean, it's just something mental illness – portrayals have to deal with, that like most people with mental illness are more likely to be the victims of violence than actually be the perpetrators and in this situation. So I remember reading that it was like a broader study that involved people from the continent of Africa and Europeans, and the voices that they would hear are often more just like these docile personalities that they have to deal with. Sometimes they're whatever, everybody has flawed judgment, so it's not exclusive.
Not me, never.
No. But all these, you know, the portrayals as far as they go in American culture are generally negative and violent. I'm just saying that a lot of that has to do with, like, American media and how portrayals go. And, I don't know. It's weird to think that, like, if you were born on a different continent and had the same exact mental problem, it manifests itself profoundly
totally
differently.
Right. Dun da da da. Throughout his whole life and everything, 24 personalities.
Oh. Okay. So that we get to 24.
Yeah, that's why we get it. We have Martin. That's not the kid though, but like it's sharing some of the names. And Patricia, that's a Kim Noble. Kim Noble's the woman who had 100 different personalities.
Oh, really?
A very famous case
of
Kim Noble. And Patricia was hers, who was like a no nonsense, like lady who had her shit together, which James McAvoy has in this movie.
I'm not great with accents. When he's portraying Patricia, is he using a Scottish accent?
She has soft... kind of like an English accent, sort of. Here's
between
the
that
deal.
And the hair, it's like Sinead O'Connor.
I know you're not like good at accents, but neither is James McAvoy. Those were terrible.
He gets all the credit for this movie being good. I liked him in this. Not
his accent was the worst. Wait, let me find a note where I get really angry. Oh, this English/New York accent is really something.
Okay, so that one, yeah, that's Dennis, the obsessive compulsive.
Yes.
He reminds me of one of my professors to some degree that, like, it's kind of intimidating. If I knew nothing about psychology and was coming into this a blank slate and everything the therapist in the movie says is just true and take it at face value, I do like the dynamic that they establish as far as this one guy who, I mean, we're kind of assuming his primary personality is Barry because that's the one sort of holding down a job.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of effeminate. You're kind of meant to presume that, like, he's gay. He's a fashion designer. And he's the one who seeks out therapy, and he's meant to be, like, the first contact for the therapist. But then when we sort of see cracks, and it turns out, like, maybe it's not Barry showing up.
Right.
Like, he doesn't seem to be the same person crying out for help when he emails in the middle of the night that he needs to see his therapist. And then when he shows up, he's very calm.
He's like, I figured it out. I'm fine.
Yeah. So that component, I really liked the idea that all these different characters are, I mean, one is kind of taking them at their word that they're there to protect Kevin Wendell Crumb. You can kind of see that as far as, mm-hmm. like, we've got Barry sort of dealing with day-to-day stuff. Hedwig, well, I guess he's just kind of stunted.
My name's Hedwig. I have red socks.
How old are you?
9.
Dennis is kind of the big brother, the, like, mm-hmm. tough guy. Yeah, the accent threw me.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, it was kind of like broad, general, tough New Yorker.
Yeah,
and
with an English accent underlying.
At times, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Hedwig was my favorite. He was by far.
Yes.
I thought he was the broadest transformation mm-hmm. as far as, like, you know, how he walks and talks. And
Yeah.
I didn't care for his dancing.
I did care for his dancing. I thought that was, like, the best part of the movie.
Why? Because it was in a basement and dancing reminded, like, you of Silence of the Lambs.
Maybe. Maybe that's why. I didn't even know why I liked it. I just really liked it. I thought it was really good. So let's just talk a little bit as this movie goes on. There's 3 girls. They get kidnapped.
Yes.
By Dennis and seemingly Patricia. Hedwig's there too, you know. But they get kidnapped. Now they're put in the basement. Dennis is also a pervert. So he keeps making them take off their different articles of clothing.
Yeah.
So these 3 girls also are not getting along. Anya Taylor-Joy, worst person to be kidnapped with ever.
She's useful at first. She's
rushing him is the right idea. Rushing him, what the one girl wanted to do at the very beginning, the girl who acts with her hands all the time. What she wanted to do with, and the girl from Skins was like, I'll go along for anything. And Anya Taylor-Joy was like, no. The 3 of them could have rushed him and gotten out.
I think that's the right thing to do in that situation. Anya Taylor-Joy kind of, I don't know, she makes some comment about how strong dude seems, and it would be not worth
it. She was just
it.
Like a negative Nancy.
At
first I thought she was part of his personality. Like, I thought she wasn't real.
Shyamalan.
Yeah, I thought I was being Shyamalan. And I was like, oh my God, he's with them the whole time. But that's not the secret, listeners. That's not the secret.
Yeah. There's a moment where Dr. Karen Fletcher says that her job is to challenge her patients.
That's not your job at all.
She's someone who specifically deals with dissociative disorders. Like, that sounds really antagonistic.
Yeah, I don't think that's your job.
No, it was weird. Like, she was trying to explain that, like, I'm provoking you on purpose because it's my job.
I don't think it is. I think you're just a jerk.
I don't think that, yeah. I don't think she was.
Therapists are not supposed to call out your shit. They just listen to it. But they never call you out.
Considering, like, this guy, his head is delicate, to put it lightly, and that she was kind of, okay, so I did like that she recognized, and she sort of does play Columbo for those moments where she's recognizing that the guy whose name I can never, Dennis, the obsessive compulsive is sort of manifesting in who should be Barry.
Right.
And he's, like, fixing books and straightening things out. Whenever, I guess, Dennis thinks she's noticing, that's when he curtails the behavior. All the same, it's really strange to think that Dennis is doing his best Barry impression.
Yeah.
I guess in the way they describe it, all the voices that don't have the light are kind of watching things happen.
Right. So, like, but then certain Barry's things voice. That I had read, they don't know of each. I mean, they know of right. each other, but they don't know
For them,
each
it's like
other.
Losing time.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like...
It's not an accurate they, portrayal even to
Exactly. Like, you wouldn't know how Barry spoke because you just wouldn't be... aware of the times that Barry was there.
I think the only time we get that, and I'm not even 100% on this.
Oh, their videos.
Well, towards the
Which,
end,
why are they taking a
jump
video
ahead.
Diary?
That was weird. That seemed like doctor's advice. Like, whenever you feel something coming out, he like puts a post-it next to the computer, like, film whatever you're doing in front of the computer.
That was stupid.
That was the only time we really get a sense of a flushed out 24, and even then we only see 8 at most.
Right.
So that's why I'm kind of – the 24, I think, is a nod to who you described as far as, like, you know, legal cases. But I think it's just kind of an arbitrary number. That kind of bugs me that, like, you don't need to – this is already silly. Like, we're pushing
You're
it and pushing
it. You're making it very silly.
Waiting for it to break. Yeah, eventually when she says the magic name and Kevin Wendell Crumb, I'm assuming it's him. I didn't think it was Dennis, but again, the – accents are a little muddy.
Yeah.
So when he's like wearing the towel, he's in like trauma victim, like he's in shock, and he doesn't have a recollection of what's taken place.
Right.
I thought that was the closest we've ever been to a representation of DID.
Right.
He's just like, what happened? What did I do? Why is she on the floor?
Right.
That kind of stuff. Like that, those moments in the movie I liked a lot.
So there's a few like quotes in this movie that made me laugh out loud. And was it the quote? Was it the way it was delivered? I'm not sure.
Shyamalan.
Firstly, we get Shyamalan right upside the head with that cameo by Shyamalan. He's like mugging to the camera. It's like watching De Niro. And it made me angry.
The dialogue for that scene is... like someone doing an exaggerated version of Aaron Sorkin. Like
yes.
it's long-winded and really like trying hard to
it needed to be
come
cut.
To a joke. Like it didn't work.
Like why was it there?
Yeah, that therapist didn't speak that way to anybody else in the movie, and all of a sudden she's got like these long flowing reactions to the, it was silly. It was very silly. It kind of bugged me.
Then we're treated from I think it was Patricia who said Asian people's music aids in digestion.
I remember that line.
What the fuck is that line?
And not for nothing, but we're talking about, what, like 4 billion people's worth?
Yeah.
Asian
just
people's
general
music.
Asian music. Can digestion, you imagine? Isn't that like bizarre? It wasn't
yeah.
the weirdest thing. I was like, oh, Patricia's a little bit racist.
Yeah, kind of like also old-fashioned in that way that like Patricia is someone's old aunt who doesn't realize she's being racist.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm surprised it said Asian and not some other term.
I guess that
right?
could have been worse.
Like that's a rug, Patricia.
That was a second
Don't
draft.
Don't be a bitch. Then my favorite, I think, line out of all of them was a line that only I would say if I was kidnapped, which was, I want to hear your Kanye West. I almost called him Conway Twitty, which is what I wanted to hear. That I would want to hear. Oh, you got Conway Twitty? Great. But she says, I want to hear your Kanye West albums.
Like, oh.
What? Only if you're being kidnapped. You're like, I would love to. Please, more.
Things only said in a hostage situation.
Shut up!
The mythology of this character kind of builds throughout the story, and we get it from more in the second half of the story, but we get descriptions of the beast and
right.
what the beast entails and why everybody is on pins and needles waiting for his arrival and what he is capable of and all these things. I mean, the beast is, I get, well, one part of the horde. And
yep.
later we find out, yes, this is all taking place under a zoo. So thanks for that. That's
yeah, I
meaningful.
Did not know that they were under a zoo for a really long time.
Words. I guess I didn't really give it much thought. Like, what are they under?
Yeah, I was surprised to find it was a zoo. I was like, oh, they're at the zoo. It's cool.
Yeah,
and no one fucking noticed.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, right. The Beast is actually also an assembly of animals. I forgot about that part. The Beast is not just human. It's the evolved, and again, going to the idea of, like, someone who's using all of their faculties and is so strong they can climb on walls with the slightest cracks or indentations, with the pressure and strength of their hand. Like, all right, not to toot my own horn, but, like, I do a little bit of rock climbing. It's kind of just a fun sort of thing I do, but I'm familiar with, like, what it takes to hold yourself up and what professional rock climbers deal with as far as climbing surfaces, and it doesn't make anyone into Spider-Man.
Well, it does James McAvoy.
Yeah, and so for as good and creepy as that scene is, I still, like, again, like, every one of these scenes, there was something I liked about it mm-hmm. and something I hated about it. And that was just very silly.
I like how he got all veiny and stuff, but then
the effect didn't look very good.
Right. And then he wasn't veiny, like, later. And then I was like, are you still the Beast? But yes, he was. But then he didn't have all the veins and stuff. And I was very confused.
Yeah. The veins come to the surface, but then his skin hardens because he's very tough. And perhaps he witnessed a rhino at the zoo. But when is there? But when his therapist, like,
armadillo,
when she's jabbing him straight up with a knife and the knife chips off, it was a very strong person jabbing a brick wall. You might break that knife.
Right.
You're not going to break that knife against skin, against hard skin, against armadillo skin. That knife is not going to shatter in your hand like you hit diamond.
Well, then the thing is, though, is she also must have been made of glass or something. He crushed her to death, but it seems like he only broke her spine. So
something he learned from boa constrictors.
That would kill her, though. Like, she just would get, like, paralyzed and then be, like, yelling on the floor.
I guess presumably he's crushing ribs into lungs. That would, you know what? There wasn't really any blood. There should have been blood.
And that was
pierced
that.
Pierced by her ribs. That would have amounted to something. I thought, yeah.
But not so quickly.
It was kind of.
There would be
it
like
was
gurgling.
Like a big snake kind of just smashing her in.
He was like hugging her to death.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a bear hug. I think she.
See, I don't like hugs, and maybe that's why I'm afraid I'm going to get hugged to death.
Yeah, you ever, like, have a scare where someone, like, it's like being tickled too long, like you eventually run out of breath and you're just like, it's not funny anymore.
Oh, I just never like it ever.
But yeah, so super hard skin, super strong, proportionally mm-hmm. strong, mm-hmm. can climb walls. I thought it was funny that they went with Beast when I thought they should have called him the Bug. Our 24th personality is the Bug.
And how about that? Or how they were like, the 24th personality. And you're just like, shut the fuck up. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
None of this makes sense.
Pretty silly. Just, all right. So we
he
talked about
people,
the woman
BT
who's...
Dubs. Let's talk about that. Can we talk about that? Why does he eat people?
I don't know. I don't
know. Yeah, we don't know, right? No, I thought maybe I missed something.
No.
He eats them because they're impure.
I mean, it's a human sacrifice, but yeah, we don't really get an explanation of why it needed to be three. Why it needed to be three whose lives wouldn't really... I mean, they sort of talk about the surveillance that was done on these girls and why their disappearance, their lives weren't going to amount to anything anyway.
Right.
Like, that's kind of fucked up. But as it relates to Anya Taylor-Joy, we do get a fleshing out of this character. It's still not great.
No, it's like, it's one of those cheap shot things. Like, it's like, I'm going to make you feel something. Child molestation.
Yeah.
It's like when they rape a girl character try and make you feel like something. And that's kind of what they did with this.
Yeah. So because of one of the running themes is this idea that fractured people could in fact be stronger than the rest of us. And because of the demand of resilience that's been put upon them, they have grown to beyond what the average person is capable of. That's kind of what those words come out of the therapist's mouth, mm-hmm. which probably not the most accurate.
Nope.
Also thing
rude to normies. Rude.
What?
Rude to normal people.
Oh.
It's like you have two parents, middle class upbringing. You'll never.
Good fucking luck.
Yeah.
Good luck out there. So with Anya Taylor-Joy's flashbacks, we kind of get like one of the most cliche like father. I mean, we sort of joked about the dancing in Silence of the Lambs, but like a throwback to a loving, you know, armed father in this case. Like, he's teaching her to hunt. Now, like, I don't know that much about hunting and guns, but, like, they were in a, like, a crouch position inside their tent, pointing a pump shotgun out, talking about, like, buck hunting. Like, it was a short-barreled shotgun. It wasn't, like, a hunting...
I've never seen people hunt deer on the ground.
Also, not a thing that, yeah, from their inside their tent.
Yeah, like, that to me, like, I don't think any deer is going to come anywhere near your ass. You hide in a tree all day.
Right, yeah.
That's how it's done.
It's boring. And in this case, I guess dad is brawling along. I guess that's his brother.
Yes, that's his brother.
Her uncle, who is a familiar face. I've seen him in a couple things.
At first, I was like, oh, this is a cute relationship. And then I was like, oh, no, it's not.
Right. Yeah, it turns pretty quick. Although I do like the young her kind of, even as a little kid, recognizing, like, what you did was not fucking okay.
Right.
And points a shotgun at her uncle. Like, that part I liked.
I did like that part. I kept thinking this was going to be like, oh, she accidentally shot her dad and killed him. I thought it was going to be some accidental shooting kind of thing. And then I thought, oh, my God, she's James McAvoy, or maybe James McAvoy is her, and so she's just pretending to be kidnapped, and that's why the other two girls don't like her, which I think would be a better movie. And so she's sitting in there with them, and they're like, what are you doing?
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a version of this script where the girls are responding to the characters without ever addressing Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
And in that way, like, it's sort of, yeah, sort of Sixth Sense its way around and Shyamalan.
That's what I thought the Shyamalan was going to be.
But yeah, the Shyamalan ending to this one, he talks about having developed this character years ago.
Well, I've always been interested in this disorder, I think, from when I was in college and, you know, taking psychology courses, and it's a fascinating field. And this character I wrote, James's character, I wrote a long time ago, and I had it in my notebook of ideas, and I have a notebook of all different ideas I get, and then they either grow into something or they just sit there, and this one really started speaking to me. I always wanted to make this. I actually almost gave it away as kind of like a producing thing. I was going to have somebody else do it, and then when it was just about to happen, I was like, no, that one's mine. I don't want to give that one away.
Giving him the benefit of the doubt that he wrote this character a long time ago and is meant to share the universe with Mr. Glass and Dunn, Bruce Willis's character. Mm-hmm. I don't need it to be tied in. I feel like M. Night Shyamalan is kind of, he's coasting, he's going back to the well. He's coasting on the hits. And yes. So that's why we're getting
so
this next film.
It was literally the last maybe 20 seconds of the movie. You see all the shit on the news screen.
Yeah.
They're at a diner.
You get all the sensationalized snippets of the story. They use the word the horde, even though where would the news have encountered
that
idea?
That doesn't make any sense. And guy at the counter is like, oh, this reminds me of that guy in that wheelchair and something. And then you're like, okay, I get it. It's Mr. Glass. And then another character pipes in and is like, yeah, Mr. Glass or something like that. And you're just like, I fucking got it, Shyamalan. Thanks. And then here comes Bruce Willis, and he's joined the party too. Oh, there's Bruce Willis. And I half expected fucking Adrian Brody to run into a wall and run into the scene. What was going on, Shyamalan? I know your movies. Get out of here.
Yeah. I didn't care for it.
I hated it. The ending of that movie, I hated. Like, did so it, for all the fun that I had in the middle, like, that last 20 seconds made me angry.
So we'll close it out there.
Let me tell you, though, Jackson's review of it. This is what I wrote it down in my notes. Jackson's review was, it was better than The Happening.
All right. I mean,
so we have a psychological romp. And better than The Happening.
Also on the poster. Better than The Happening. Which is a true statement.
Yeah.
I
think that's fair.
Is as silly as this can get, still better than The Happening.
He's done awful things to people, and he'll do awful things to you.
But yeah, we'll leave it off there. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I need to recover from talking about this movie. It was challenging. I don't think of this as the same, like, sort of rejuvenation to his career. Mm-hmm. I don't think this was as good as The Visit. I think The Visit was very good for what it aimed to do.
I kind of like The Visit.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Overall, I enjoyed it. I thought that more like a Twilight Zone movie than this. And because it doesn't aspire to be some extraordinary thing, it kind of just does what it aims to do well. But yeah, we'll be back before long talking about a Christmas movie. I want to get back in the Christmas spirit.
All right.
It's early. It's not even December. Your Christmas tree is up.
I put it up on Thanksgiving.
Really?
Thanksgiving is the day I put the Christmas tree up. Okay. I mean, I'm not done decorating.
Is that a tradition? It's funny. Yeah. This year I had Thanksgiving dinner with white people, and that's a new one for me. Yeah. And apparently Thanksgiving dinner is Thanksgiving lunch. And at that, it's like a pretty early lunch still for me. So it's funny to think that like people have
more stuff
they can do. What time
do they have their Thanksgiving dinner?
At 2?
No. You have Thanksgiving dinner at 3.
That's still lunch. But you have it at 3, and then you spend the rest of your day putting up the tree.
What time
now
do you normally eat
traditions.
It?
Oh, I mean, we announce like a 6:30 time.
That's
and my
too late.
Family sits down probably around 8:30. 8:30, 9:30. It's dinner. It's Thanksgiving dinner. We're coming from, you know, at least 2 different states, but we're also Puerto Rican.
That's a late Thanksgiving dinner.
It's just we do everything late. We're Spaniards. I don't. Yeah, well, I guess I've grown up hearing these stories of a white Thanksgiving. We'll be back soon talking about Christmas movies specifically. We haven't fully figured out, but there are a couple newer Christmas movies I'm curious to take a look at, namely You Better Watch Out. I'm trying to get into the spirit. I think it'll be a nice sort of break from all the schoolwork to sort of really get into the season.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can find us on all the social medias. We are on Twitter at Rance Macabre. We are on Facebook. You can drop us a line either place. We are also on Patreon. You can check us out at patreon.com/rancemacabre, where we have extra material on there.
Yeah, we're going to be talking Twilight Zone this time around and sort of the broader impact Twilight Zone has had to some of our favorite movies.
We're occasionally on Instagram. Going to film a video for that here in a second. Maybe in front of the Christmas tree.
Oh, good. Production value.
Oh, good. So drop us a line. Let us know what you think of the Shyamalan movies. Start using Shyamalan as a verb. I encourage it. It can mean lots of things. Disappointment or surprise.
Yeah.
Or disappointing surprise. Sort of
depending on a twist ending. That's kind of, yeah. Over-reliance. But yeah, that'll do it for me. This is Darren signing off.
I'm Mindy. Thanks.
The Rance Macabre. Cutting.
Cultured.
And curated.